Hi, this is Molly Pagels. Welcome to the Faith Center Podcast Network. We want to be a source of hope, joy, and encouragement on your drive to work, your time at home, or anywhere in between. Be sure to like and subscribe to get all of our daily and weekly content. For more information about Faith Center and the podcast network, please visit our website, lg4squared.com, lg4squared.com. If you would like to be a part of the conversation, you can email the show at podcast@lg4squared.com. Thanks, and enjoy the show.
Hello there. Welcome to the Barnabas Project. I'm excited to be in the studio today. We have a special guest that we get to interview. For some of you, this is your very first introduction to this guest, and we're very excited to have you get to know this individual and this couple that has blessed us with their presence. But first, who's in the studio with me?
Hola, friends. It's Standard Candace.
But you said hola,
I did. I'm just feeling, you know, maybe it's Taco Tuesday. I don't know, but just
I did have Raul's today. But Raul's. Most days, Raul's. I have Raul's. So we're trying to get sponsored by Raul's just to send us tacos.
Every time. We're like, Jesus hey, name. Raul.
Make it so.
You hey, could man. Sponsor us. Actually, I'm really excited. These two have become really good friends. Really, really thankful that they're here. This is Sam and Hannah Burrow. Hello, guys.
Yo, what's up?
Hello.
It's weird that we have an audience. It's against protocol.
Fun. Yeah, hilarious. So we get to hear from Sam today.
Mm-hmm.
Hannah's here to make sure that he's honest.
Yes.
And he's telling the telling stories correctly.
Yes.
But I am excited to get to hear from both of you. And Hannah, we will hear from you specifically another day. But today mm-hmm. we're going to hear from Sam. And then Hannah's going to jump in and again. Keep you on track.
Right.
But Sam, why don't you tell us, some of our listeners have no context for who Sam is. Mm. So why don't you start out telling us, where did you grow up? Where were you born? And what was your childhood like?
Gotcha. That's 28 years ago. It all starts in the good land of Texas. Mm. That's God where most of my Texas. Family is at. Is in Texas. And so, oh man, it's hard to pick a place to start, but I guess I could start with my mom. My mom's birthday is today. So shout out to mom.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
She's been on the podcast before.
Yeah, before me. Multiple times before me.
Yeah, listener, if you go back into the archives, there's Catherine and Andy Miller.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we interview them and they're on a few Daily Words. And at the time they were stranded here with their truck. And they were living with Mike and I,
yep.
And we were like, we knew Sam was coming, but we couldn't say anything yet.
Yeah.
And so we were like, let's have Catherine and Andy on. It'll be fun. So yes, they've been on Barnabas Project a few times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it starts off in Texas, and my mom was very much like a classic West Texas girl. Classic American household, the American dream, this and that. And outside of life gets really messy and a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And so eventually she found herself with two sons, single parent, working at a Mexican food restaurant as the manager. I believe it was Del Taco or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And this dude walks in, new to the job. And that's where my mom met Andy. And he's my dad. He's all I've ever known as a mm-hmm. father.
How old are you? At that time,
I'm not existent. I do exist. I'm probably three.
I think so.
I think I'm about three
mm-hmm.
when this is happening. And so around that same time, they got very intimate very quickly. Like this became this good friends.
Close.
Yeah. And, his parents took care of me and my brother Grant and mm-hmm. just loved us mm-hmm. and just took care of us. And yeah, and so they got married, and then they had a daughter, who is my youngest sister.
And you are middle oldest?
I am the middle child.
Middle
I am the black sheep. I am the troublemaker. I live up to my name.
Too.
And so we found ourselves as a family of three. My brother, Grant, being the eldest, the chosen one. my sister, Reagan, who is the baby, you know, the favorite. And then me, who was just this ruffian, you know, this rogue amongst everyone. And so, yeah, so we found ourselves in Texas for a while, and then we moved to New Mexico, Albuquerque, and that's where my dad took on a youth pastor position there, and my mom worked with the government. We'll censor this part out, right?
Sure, yes. I'm editing it right now.
And she did, like, contracts and stuff for them. And so, again, we're still in this, like, American-style dream, right?
Unpack that for me a little bit. What do you mean by, like, American-style dream?
You have a job, 9 to 5. You have a nice home. You know your neighbors. You know, you kind of, like, have a plan for what you want your life to look like, but it's still, it's pretty much the same thing. It's just like, I'm going to work till I'm old and then I'll just be in retirement and then die and be in heaven, you know?
Yeah.
Like this American dream that we're all, you know, it gets presented to us, you know, at a young age. Save your money and do these things. Have a 5-year plan. Not saying those things aren't wrong, but when that becomes your dream and your idol, you kind of lose yourself and your individuality in it.
Yeah.
So,
there's not much of a calling.
Right.
There's not room for calling in that.
Right.
It's just 9 to 5, pay the bills, get up, do it all over again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so early on in my childhood, I found out that I'm not the best at reading. And so I went to a couple of specialists and I was diagnosed with dyslexia. And so I always had a really hard time with school. Mm. And especially when I wasn't in like a lower elementary level anymore, and in a higher elementary level is definitely where it came to play. And so when we first moved to New Mexico and then we moved in, we were like in the mountains and all these things, we moved into the city and the suburbs, and I went to a really large public school is where I was really met with the reality of like my learning disability.
Mm.
This is one of my most vivid memories of like, I'm in my school, in my like classroom, and there's like the advanced reader group, and then there's like the normal reader group. And then I sat by myself because I didn't know how to even read.
Wow.
And I like had teachers make fun of me.
Wow.
No.
I was like bullied to the point to the fifth grade where my parents had to pull me out of school because I was just, you know, I was just everyone's excuse to be mean to.
Were you aware of this at the time?
Yeah.
Like for sure. It's not just in hindsight that you're like, wow, I was really picked on, but you were, you're living it. You're experiencing it. You're
like thrown in trash cans, like all the classic things is what I was experiencing. And so finally my parents were like, we just got to get them out of the situation. So I was homeschooled for like a year or two. We just kind of did online classes.
Did you like homeschooling?
No, I don't know. It's hard to think back to that time and be like, I really enjoyed this because I remember just kind of being in front of a computer. It was one of those like large ones. You remember those big desktops?
Yeah.
Or those big monitors, you know, and it has that big back to it.
Yeah.
You know, I remember being like, you know, clicking. But at the same time, I had really good friends around me.
Yeah.
I had the church where we went to, where my dad was a youth pastor in, I met my best friend, still best friends today. His name's Drew Sharp. He occasionally listens to this podcast.
Shout out
to Drew Sharp.
Hey, Drew
Sharp. You said like sharp, like pointy.
Yep.
Okay. We hope someday, Drew, that you fly out here and
join us.
Yeah.
Join us, Drew.
If there's anyone who would be perfect for this, he has a really deep voice.
We'll put you on the podcast.
Welcome to Smooth Jazz. You know, it's just like a really good voice. But I met him. Our origin story's fun. We were at a New Year's party, first grade, I think. And the girls were chasing all the guys around.
Yeah.
And they threw us into a closet, or they threw me into a closet and tied me up to somebody.
What?
And I looked behind me and there's this other gentleman. And I said, hey. He's like, hey. I was like, my name's Sam. He's like, my name's Drew.
You were tied together?
And it was one of those boas and those like feather boa.
Whoa.
And I was like,
man, you first graders party.
We were in some sticky situations, but I was like, hey, let's help each other and become best friends. And he said, absolutely. And so till this day, we still hang out and talk.
And that's until today. That's,
up to this day. Till today,
sorry,
you know,
Drew,
you should have called me back. But I had friends and I had really strong family. Like my parents always fought for me. Mm-hmm. In school meetings and things. And there's always like that, but slowly and surely this identity of not belonging was being suggested to me, or not fitting in, or not something's wrong with me, you know? Mm-hmm. And so homeschooled for a couple of years. And then I get reintroduced into middle school, right? I come in the seventh grade. And that summer is where I was like, I'm actually pretty funny. I can actually make friends. Girls are kind of cute. And I just kind of naturally was developing into a young man. And
tell me more about
it. Sure.
Well, I think we're good. I think we got it.
And so I just went into seventh grade being like, I'm just going to make friends and I'm just going to, you know, try. And so quickly became very popular, very friendly, but still was struggling with academics. And again, those things started happening where teachers would just kind of write me off. Or I remember when I was in my history class was New Mexican history class. Mm-hmm. My teacher would just yell at me and tell me to sit out in the hall. And I was disruptive. I started to become up to my middle child name of being this crazy middle child. And so
how were you disruptive? Just like, I would just jokes like in class.
Or? Yeah. I would be a class clown or not take things seriously. Mm-hmm. I remember one time this talking about this comes back in my brain, how like one of my friends would like lick batteries during class. And he's like, hold these two metal pieces and lick. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. And he was like, blah! I don't know why that comes back in my brain. But like at that same time, I still would purposely do that. So I didn't have to confront this idea. Like I can't read. I still remember like my friends, I'm doing quotation marks with my fingers.
It works well on a radio show.
I know.
Give us questions. Yeah.
They would be like, Sam can't read and all this stuff. So I made sure I did everything in my power to avoid that conversation or to avoid. And so eventually I found myself in a room full of my teachers and the principal and my mom talking about my future. And this is more in the eighth grade now where this is like happening. No, I guess it would be like sixth grade and then seventh grade. Yeah, that's a better timeline. We're sitting around and this one teacher, I do remember her name. I don't think she's a listener, so I'm still going to drop it. Miss Armijo.
Shout out.
Shout out to Miss Armijo.
She's a list. She's
she's like, I remember Sam. She was digging into me.
Oh.
Like in this parent teacher conference. Mm-hmm. And like it's just like, Sam is this and Sam is that and Sam's and it's like and I was just sitting there just like feeling like this person's like if I was like the ground of who I am is just being dug into, you know, and there's nothing in there. And all of a sudden I hear this loud like and my mom slams the table and stands up and she's like, you're not going to talk about my son like that in front of me.
Heck yeah.
And she's like, here's what you all are going to do. You're going to give him his assignments and like laid it out for everybody.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, okay.
Yeah.
And so I had strong people beside me who were speaking identity into me. But a lot of times we really we have to hear it from a different avenue to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
what do you think in during that season, difficult season, what was God building in you? I've heard you say you love to be a champion for others.
Yeah.
Do you think that's kind of where that comes from?
Yeah, I think it definitely came from being a person of the people, understanding how terrible people can be. Even in middle school, I was a part of like an anti-bullying group.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in seventh grade and I found out my bullies from elementary school were still there, I made sure I got my revenge. I'm not promoting revenge right now. I'm just saying how I used my gift that the Lord gave me to rally people for a cause in a terrible way. And so I got to throw my own bullies into the trash. And I said, never do it again to others, you know? I'm not saying we should live by an eye for an eye, you know? But going back to that point of like, yeah, like definitely was growing into that ability of my personality, but definitely still struggling with it. Mm-hmm. But it was around that same time, like my mom was telling me more about me and my brother's origin and this like soft secret of like, you're unwanted. You're not desired. You don't belong here. It was just more and more creeping into my heart until eventually I was kicked out of middle school. It's like into seventh grade, kicked out. And they're like, we can't handle this kid. And it wasn't like I was like starting fights or these things. It's just like I wasn't doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was just like, I'm not doing my work. You know, I'll sit in detention all I want, but I'm still going to, you know.
Right.
And so got kicked out of middle school. So then I did back to online school, but I had to do it at the church with my dad. So I was at the church all the time with my dad. which I don't know if it ever drove him insane. I've always wanted to ask him, like, was I a big thorn in your hill? But he would probably say no. But around that same time, my parents went on a mission trip with our church there to Thailand. And there they started to hear this voice of a calling out to them to become a part of something. You know, you said that earlier about the American dream, but not having a calling. And they started to realize what their calling was. And so soon they came back and they were like, we're going to test the Lord and what he wants to do. And so
who are you impersonating? Right? Is that your mom?
It's both of them at the same time.
Okay. Just trying to be clear.
And so they're like, all right, Lord, we're going to give you tests like any good Christian does. You know, we have to test the Lord, you know. I'm shaking my head. No, if the Lord's calling you to do something, you know, obviously pray into it, but we're not going to turn back a test. Be like, you're going to have to pass it now. But one of their conditions for the Lord was that all three of the children had to say yes. And so my brother, being the eldest and the most honorable, said, absolutely, parents. He sounds nothing like that. And my sister's like, sure. Sounds great, mom and dad. Even though she sounds like Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
But I had nothing to do. I was just like, sure, I got nothing going on for me. You know, just because like I was literally just sitting in the wing, you know, in the standby of just like, what am I going to do with my life? Mm-hmm. You know, and I was at that like critical point of identity where that I believe if we would have stayed in where we were, I would be in a much darker and a much different path. But this is one of those moments where I see in my life where the Lord really rescued me, but also my family.
Yeah.
Because we definitely were on different spectrums from where we were when we were kids.
What was your relationship with Jesus prior to Thailand?
I mean, it was that classic, like, my parents' faith is my faith. You know, it's like, all I've ever known is Christianity. All I've ever known is the Bible and its words and Jesus' words are read. You know, and I can answer questions, you know, like classic Christian answer, Jesus, you know.
With your dad being the youth pastor, were you involved? Was that something you did?
Yeah, I mean, I was in the youth group, but I thought a lot of what he was doing was with the high schoolers. I had some pretty crazy encounters. And by encounters, I don't mean that in a cool way. Like, we had some people in the youth group who were like plotted out the murder of me and my family once.
Oh, wow. Normal things then.
Yep, we had like someone who was like running around with a gun in the youth group. So my dad was busy, right?
Yeah,
God, I get it. Yeah,
okay.
And my mom was like working with the government, and my grandparents lived with us too. So it was this very like everyone was in and out. We're family, but like we still really didn't know each other, you know. So when we moved to Thailand, we're now across the world. And we're living in a three or four story tall, like narrow building where we had to learn what it was like to be a family.
Wow.
And it was a rough year in Thailand. And first of all, living life together, now doing it in a different place, but also seeing that those words that I was reading about and kind of knew about actually is happening today. And that the Lord's not just pages, but like a being. And my whole entire family was on that journey of like, oh, this is the word, this is the Bible, and how it has grown into today, and how the Lord is still active, and how there is still all these things that are happening, and just like it was becoming flesh, you know, for not only my parents, but for me. And so we go to an international school in Bangkok, Thailand. Called ICS, International Community School of Thailand, or Bangkok. It was an American school. 50% had to be Thai, was one of the rules of having international school in Thailand. And then the other half could be any other nationality. So we had a large Thai presence, but then the second biggest one was Korean, and then Indian, and then like bits of like other nationalities and stuff. And I was like the one American, I was the one of the only like white people in my grade, right? And so I came in the eighth grade and met all my close friends on the same day. All the friends from eighth grade till graduating till today. I've dropped their names around the office before, but made really good friendships and then had teachers who like were like, Sam, like one of the teachers that took an interest in me, his name is Mr. Michael. And if you were to mix a Santa Claus with a Harley Davidson biker.
Okay. All right.
So like Santa from like Guardians, Arise of Guardians. You know that one?
Yeah.
I just watched that the other day, but that's what I pictured as soon as you said
that's
that.
A great way to picture.
Rise of the Guardians, Santa.
Yeah. He saw me and saw my struggles, and we like went with the school counselor and kind of gave her the gist of everything. And like, this wasn't like public school expectations anymore. This is an international school where like you're like doing a lot more than just like a basic American education would be. And so like, those expectations, all those things. And he was like, okay, I'm going to help Sam do this. And he wasn't even my homeroom teacher. He wasn't like a teacher I had like one class with. Like he went out of his way. And wow. So after school, I'd meet with him and he would listen to what I struggled with, like learning wise, and then gave me the tools to work. And I still use those tools today. Mm. Like when I make an outline for things,
yeah,
I learned that from him. And like, championed me, and also at the same time was someone who started to say the things that my parents, that like my friend Drew, were championing me, but I wasn't hearing, but I was now able to hear it.
Nice.
Because they're your parents, you kind of just
right.
Like, it's like, that's just mom.
Whatever, mom and dad.
Yeah.
I guess that's my voice, but but like he started to really sow into me and see the potential in me.
Wow.
Of like, you're a leader. You have purpose. Don't give up on yourself. Mm. Don't accept that you're an idiot. You're not. Don't choose to be one though, you know? Mm. And so he really poured into me my first year in Thailand and really like shaped my academical future endeavors there. And one of the reasons why I was able to graduate.
Had you identified that you were dyslexic at this time?
Mm-hmm.
So you knew that going in.
Right. I was better.
Yeah.
You know, but I just didn't have the tools to study, to prepare myself for a test and things like that. And so like when we went to the school counselor and there was like some like I could take longer on a test was one of the things, or maybe I could bring a notebook if I needed to, or I could retake a quiz. Like I had some like special things, but the things I was missing were the tools to even get to that point, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's what Mr. Michael gave to me.
Mm-hmm. Was there any faith base in the school?
Yeah, it was a Christian school.
It was a Christian school.
And so I think that's why this mystical creature, Mr. Michael, was sowing these seeds. And we were talking about this in John, about thinking about the people that were sowing seeds in us, you know? And I think Mr. Michael is someone who planted his seed a long time ago, and now there's fruit from it.
Yeah. Where was Mr. Michael from?
I think... after that year, he disappeared.
He just faded.
I wish.
He said, bye, Mr. Michael. And he disappeared right before my eyes.
He saw this guy fall off a roof and then he disappeared out of a red suit and he put it on. And his name was Tim Allen. Oh. No, he's doing good. I see him on like Facebook every once in a while. I'm not really on Facebook.
Smart.
Yeah. Even before everything, election, pandemic, I was like, hey, yo, babe, all I see is like people arguing.
Pretty much.
I'm just going to delete it. And so every once in a while when I'm on, I like go checking on him and he's doing good. Now he rides motorcycles across America.
Awesome.
Nice.
Yep.
So you're in Thailand.
Yes.
For middle school and high school?
From 8th grade to 12th grade, I was in Thailand and it was an adventure to say the least, because not only was I there as a missionary for my parents, who we first started off teaching English to the Bible. By the end of that time, my parents were working against sex trafficking, not anywhere close to that organization we started with, but partnering with men and women who are in the sex trade and teaching them viable skills to live life and give them different opportunities while building relationship with them and introducing them to Jesus.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Did you have any involvement in what your parents were doing, or were you just a student going to school?
I was a student going to school, even though I was in a new place and on a better path. I mean, I was still this middle child rogue, you know? And so part of this story is the fact that I was there as a missionary and did a lot of missionary things there. And so like a lot of my focus there was, helping organize, like we would go to orphanages around Thailand and like, you know, hang out with them, bring supplies, all those things. Like I would do that maybe 3 times a year. And so that was something I got to really help with a lot in the beginning. And in when we're teaching English through the Bible too, that was really relational too. And so we met a lot of our friends there too. Mm. But toward the end, when things were like, I was like 10th, junior, you know, senior, I really had to focus on studies. And so I had to really figure out what that looked like. And so I did a lot more like community service. It'd be like community service. Mm-hmm. And I would bring my friends with me. My friend who I mentioned before, his name was originally Jung Lee. He has a fun nickname with us, but it needs to be censored. But he was always someone.
To clarify, it does, but it doesn't need to be censored.
Yeah. On an international idea, it's fine, but it's a more American way.
You might just need to say it.
Yeah. It's making him.
Yeah. I know. I'm sorry. I keep talking about him. His nickname was Bumsuck. And he's a really good friend of mine. And it's a Korean nickname, but it was also given because it's funny. It's a long story. Yeah,
because you're high school boys.
Yes, because we're the high school boys.
Say no more.
But he's a great friend of mine. He actually went to jail after high school because he believed in a nonviolence approach. And so he said no to the military in Korea, because in Korea you have to do 2 years of military. And so he had to go to jail for 2 years, you know. And when he came out, he was, you know, super thin. And now we still talk all the time. He loves our children, me and Hannah's children. He's always texting me saying like, oh, can you send me a picture of Noah and Lincoln? It's like, I still have community with these guys.
Does he listen to podcasts?
He's going to. I'll tell him that I shouted him out. Yeah, my high school was that missionary portion of it too. But also, my friends and living in international school, my friends are very rich and my friends were very, could just do whatever they want. So we are always out doing something, right? Mm-hmm. And all you had to do to get into a club or, you know, a bar or what it might be is just paying them off, you know? And so early in my high school career, it wasn't like we had to hide drinking. We could drink, you know, we didn't have to worry about that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of trouble came with that. A lot of this dual life coming very quickly to me, where we like doing missionary things, hanging out, but then I would just go out on the town with my friends, you know, drink too much, all those things. And around the 11th grade, we went on like a pre-senior trip. grade called it. We were out, and already around that time, I was already very like frustrated that I was wearing these masks, right? Mm-hmm. I refer to them as like, I'm a missionary kid. I like to party, you know, like these really silly masks. And that night was a crazy night, and a lot of poor choices were made. And I was at this club and I was sitting by myself. My girlfriend at the time was mad at me. So she was off in a corner with her friend, and they were just glaring at me from across the club, as one does. And this woman approached me, and that was kind of normal in Thailand. I'm a white male. I'm in a club, and something that Thailand is known for is like the sex industry, right? Prostitution and stuff. And it's happened before. And even amongst the, you know, drinking and partying and all those things, I had morals to me. I was like, I'll never do this, you know, all those things. But it still was like, I make some compromises, but there's things I don't compromise about, you know. But this woman walks up to me and she's like, oh, hi. And I was like, hi. And we started to have a conversation. And I was like giving her like details on like what my parents do and like giving her resources and stuff. Just like total ministry mode, you know, from, you know, I'm really mad at my girlfriend at the time to now I'm like sharing about Jesus and how I can help this woman. And she's like, okay, like, well, and like my friends are out there dancing. She's like, let's go hang out and dance with your friends. I'm like, sure. And so we're like out there, and it was like silly because my guy friends are out there being silly. And everyone's like, all right, it's time to go. And like, I was walking away and she like grabbed my arm and turned, and I looked at her, and this woman goes, in English this time, and we were speaking in Thai when we were first talking, she's like, remember me. And for a moment I was like, I just like felt that conviction go through my eyes into like the core. Like it like went there, went to like my chapel, my inner being, like the fabric of my soul. and went directly to me. And I knew in that moment that was the Lord talking to me. Mm. And it was this huge wake up call of this, like, part of me thinks that was might maybe an angel. I don't know. But it was one of those really crazy, spooky, supernatural things that happened to me because it was pure English. It was like, remember me. And I was like,
wow.
So then I just left the group. I just disappeared. And I started walking along the beach and turned off my phone. People were calling me. All my, like, I was like, boop. And I was walking across the beaches of Thailand, like, mad. And just, like, wrestling with the Lord and finally like letting out and being honest about it because I knew the Lord was seeking me. You know, I knew without a doubt that was the Lord in that moment. And so I was just like, oh, like, why would you like give me like the struggles? Why would you like, I was just like going at it. And so finally hours and hours later, it's now mid morning, still walking. I found a pier and I sit on this pier, put my phone out next to me sitting there. And I'm just like looking out. I've walked a bunch of miles by now. And I'm looking out at the ocean and I'm just finally like, Lord, I just don't know what I'm going to do with my life. I don't know who I am. I'm tired of wearing these masks, tired of fighting you. I'm tired of knowing that you're right, but I'm tired of that. I don't want to give up my desires or what I want to do.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden my phone that was off starts to play a song and it's my favorite song. And I don't know if you've seen my denim jacket before. That has my patches and stuff on it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hannah gave me this gift, the reason why that patch is on my shoulder. But it says, all you need is love. And I love the Beatles. Something my dad is very good at is his musical taste. And so growing up with him, I got to be in those good oldies, you know, and the Beatles. I love the Beatles. Mm-hmm. And my favorite song of theirs is All You Need Is Love. And all of a sudden I hear the, you know, that was perfect.
Yeah.
It sounds just like that.
Yeah, that's it. And listeners won't know that we didn't just play on that song.
And like this imagery of the Lord sitting next to me just enters my brain and he has his arm around me and he's like singing this over me, you know? And in that moment, I just melt off this like crust that I like place this like wall of my, who like this, like almost like a costume. Mm. And I finally like unzipped it and was bare and just like, like, I don't want to wear this anymore. I want to be totally yours, Lord, you know? And the Lord's like, it's yours to have. And then that moment was like, I count that as like my first, like my actual moment of just like full commitment. Cause like I was baptized in like when I was like 10 years old, like I believe in Jesus, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But this is where it became like my personal moment where I fully was like, this is going to change everything.
Yeah.
And it did. You know, and so senior year was good, but I had to make some tough calls, cut out some friends. I've told you guys some of the stories of some of the struggles I had with some teachers and just like I just knew I had to correct things and I knew my leadership ability because it was growing in high school. Like I was part of like my like school council for the students and like that's where my ability of like people gathering around me and I would fight for my class. And so I had no problem talking to the principal because sometimes I was in the principal's office and I'd say, hey, we should talk about this. You know, it was a really good time and almost like an end to that season of like leaving that life behind and then stepping back into America, experiencing all crazy things, right? Like you guys asked me to like tell you some stories about some of those times, right? There's the all you need is love God moment, you know, that I love to tell people. And there's moments like me and my dad were taking a group of students during into summer, right? Up to like the border. It's like northern Thailand where we were going to help. I think we're like help build a school for them. Mm. And we had like students come fly in from America. And so me and my dad in this program worked together, you know. And so we stopped at this temple and we get to the temple. You know, I'm like, all right, you take off your shoes, like giving them the gist of everything. And we get there. I'm like slash translator, you know, and the guy and the monk there is half translating too at the same time. So he'd be like, you know, saying Thailish or Tinglish or whatever you want to call it. So it was really hard to figure out what he's saying. So there's this huge gong, right? Think of like your basic wall, right? And it was the size of a wall, right? This huge gong. And he's like, watch this. And he like rubbed the center of the gong, you know, it was like me just like, like, and it was like loud. You could feel the vibration in your ears. And he was like, the Thai girls come. And we're like, I was like, no, we don't want the Thai girls to come. He wasn't saying Thai girls. He was saying tigers. Oh, so out of the jungle came three tigers, just walked their way and just kind of laid down.
Wow.
And just kind of like, all of us are kind of like, what's happening? And we found out that they like feed the tigers so they don't attack them. And that's how they like notify them to do those things.
Wow.
And so like,
that's awesome.
Yeah. And so I have all these like crazy moments like that. And like, even in those crazy parting times with my friends, all the trouble we'd get in. Like one time, my friend, his name was Sartak, and he's an Indian fellow, really good friend of mine. And we always had really good conversations about religion and stuff. He had a little bit too much to drink. And so I was taking him home, and he decided to kick a taxi.
Okay. Right. Smart.
And we're with like another group of people, females were there and stuff like that from our school. And the taxi guy gets out of his car with a machete.
Oh, jeez.
And stands up and chases me and my friend Sartak. And we're just booking it. And this guy's running through the streets of Thailand with this machete. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. I can... it was the time.
Did you come back with any, like... I love traveling because I love food.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Did you come back with any food items that you're like, oh, this was my favorite thing that you still make today?
You know,
that
you
brought
is,
with you?
Yeah.
Hannah's like, yeah.
You know, what is... I don't make this, sadly. I'm like, I just want to make it myself. But, Hannah, what is my favorite Thai food?
Pot siu.
Mm-hmm. What's pot siu?
It is... It's like if you were to take a chunk of heaven and stir fry it. It's like a noodle base, sort of eggs, broccoli, lettuce. It's more of a brown sauce beef. But that's my favorite, one of my most favorite meals in Thailand was pot siu.
Huh. What made it specific to Thailand? Like, all what is there seasonings or what do you?
It's just like a Thai meal.
Huh.
And so, I mean, I would have it probably every day in Thailand. And like, I mean, and I, and there in Thailand, you'd have like a spice table on your table there.
Yeah.
So if you want to make it super spicy, you just load it up with chilies, but also they put sugar on their plates too. And so like I would put some sugar in there, a little bit of spice, you know, mix that all
you
up.
You gotta balance
and,
that out.
And so when Hannah met me and we're having it, like I would like, bust out like a sugar, like a little bit of sugar, like for like tea, and I'd rip it and put it on there. And she'd be like, what is this guy? This is
sugar
weird.
Beef? That's
Yeah. But
it's actually really good.
It's actually really
it
good.
Is good.
Have you ever tried to make it here?
No.
You have to get special noodles. And I'm always like, babe, we don't have the right noodles. Oh, it's not like just a fettuccine. Just
please.
We have a friend that travels and knows some certain places in Portland where they, she's Taiwanese, but certain shops to go into Portland to get specific things. We might need to see if we can make this happen sometime.
Yeah.
Shout out to Tahira.
Shout out.
Loves getting us some great food. She actually just came back with some, her mom visited her and she brought us over food and like even like top ramen packets, but they're specific to where her mom is and they're different. They're not just like the ramen brand here. And we've just been eating random market food from her. So
It's
wonderful.
So got fresh back from Thailand. Right. And I was just like, all right,
you kind of back to Texas. So you left Thailand in a kind of crazy way.
Cover of darkness.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean like, so there's coups happening in Thailand. There was multiple times where we had to leave for different sort of reasons. And also, I'm also, for the viewer, there's like a ton of stories that tie into a lot of these things that I wish I can just tell you all the things, but those can happen at a later point.
Yeah. I think your parents mentioned that it was like a snow day, like how we have snow days. It's like a coup day.
Yeah. And they would happen
frequently.
Yeah. And so they were burning down the city. I don't want to go into why they were or anything like that, but lower class was upset with the higher class and then the higher class hired the cops. And this is one of those classic moments where I'm like, I should have listened to my parents, but I was going to go hang out with my friends. And I was like, I'm going to go hang out during this revolution. And my mom was like, you probably shouldn't go out. And I'm like, Mom, see you later. And so me and my friends are driving in Bangkok. And I'm like, I just feel this moment of like, we shouldn't go to that one. Let's go to a different one. And so obviously I always contributed all these like crazy moments where I like see the Lord, like really like, let's not go there, Sam. I always call it my gut feeling, but I know it's the spirit, you know, the Lord leading me to not get myself killed. But like we went to the demonstrations because we thought that'd be a great idea. And we're watching history happen, you know. And all of a sudden we look down the street and there's riot gear. Mm. Police in riot gear starting to push the crowd for us. So we look behind us down this one-way street and there's police in riot gear pushing us all together. So now we're mixed up with the protesters. And all of a sudden we start to see these tear gas. And so I'm like, oh man, we got to go. So I'm grabbing my friends and we're going through alleyways. And then all of a sudden rubber bullets start getting shot into the crowd. And I get hit by a ricocheted one. And it's like busted my leg open. It's like deadly or anything, but I just had a huge bruise and this mark from it. Mm. But got home and my mom's like, well, how was it, Sam? You know, and I'm like, yeah, and this one of those moments where I was like, well, I really should have listened to you. And the place where we were going to go actually had bombs in there and they were going off. And so I left pretty soon after that to start my young professional life in America. And so
did your whole family come back or just you?
It was just me. I flew internationally by myself for the first time. And I remember it was Bangkok to Japan to LAX to Albuquerque, New Mexico. We're there. That's where my grandpa is on my dad's side. Andy's dad.
Heard about this gentleman.
Yeah. Mr. Grampy Roy, shout out to you. I get to Japan and there's this little Japanese lady holding up a sign that says B-A-R-R-O-W and then Sam underneath it. And I go, oh, man. She spelled my name wrong. Found out that actually my flight was canceled. And she's like, we're going to find you a plane. You know, and so I'm running through the international airport in Japan with this little Japanese lady. And we're running, trying to get to a plane. Huh. And we get to this plane where all these other Americans are trying to get on, screaming match. And she's like, you can, and she's like, and she like went up to these through the other airline hostess people up at the front, talk to them. And like snuck me into the back and made it onto like one of the last flights to get out for whatever was going on. So finally make it to New Mexico and I have this list, right? I'm like, here's what I want to do. I want to find my passion. I know that I'm a leader. I know I'm great with people. What am I going to do? So I made this list and I was like, elderly, young adults, youth, children, little children, kids with special needs, you know? And so I was like, hey, I'm going to do this, you know? And so I started to get jobs or volunteer like homeless shelters and things like that. But at the same time, my friends in Albuquerque, New Mexico were starting to grow into what I was growing out of. I have grown out of, you know, I had that college experience in my high school.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was already kind of even in a more like matureness, but I wouldn't really call it matureness. I honestly called myself like kind of like a snob. Mm-hmm.
It sounds like you had your adventure that a lot of people don't get until college.
Right.
So you got that experience and then you're kind of like, well, that's great. But I also heard from God.
Right.
He let me out of that already.
Yeah. And so I became really frustrated with the world. Also, I graduated high school, everybody. Praise to him.
Let's go.
Yeah. And I remember, and that's one of the most proudest days of my life because I could like, look, I remember looking out in the crowd and being like, there are people in my life who told me I'd never get here.
Yeah.
And I did.
Yeah.
And so I graduated, you know, I can read. but my friends were going down that path and I was like begging them, don't do it. And I was like, all these things. And then finally the Lord was like, Sam, you can't be their Jesus.
Yeah.
You can't help them if they don't want to be helped. Mm-hmm. Classic too. Am I right?
And you're right.
And he was like, and you're judging them off of your experiences. They've never traveled out of this country. They've never seen someone with leprosy. They've never, you know, been around monks who showed you tigers, you know, they never had to flee a country from, you know, and you can't judge people off of that, you know, but what you can do is advocate and like share your experience, but not judge people by it.
Right.
And so I was like, man, I just gotta go somewhere else, you know? And so I traveled around for a bit, went to Texas, worked at like a, I don't want to call it an orphanage, but it's
a children's home.
A children's home. Thank you. Yeah. And kind of worked with elementary school kids as an after school sort of helper and stuff like that. And I loved it. And then I was like in home with the guys at the foster home care too. So like it was even off on the clock all the time. And then my parents are going to move to Michigan, right? My mom got a job there and I was like, yeah, I'll go with you guys. That sounds fun. And I was like, in that place I was just working. I really didn't have friends and stuff. And I was also, there's like tension between the friend group in New Mexico too, because they were just, you know, they're living their life and that's what they wanted to do. And I was like, I'm also going to go live my life. And so I was beginning to check off my list and got to Michigan and couldn't find a job for the life of me. So here I am,
22, 21.
Yeah. Sam, looking to get a job, right? Going to like Subway, McDonald's. Mm-hmm. People who are from Michigan or Northern America might hear of places called Meijer. That's kind of like the Walmart, the Safeway of the North.
The
Safeway of the North.
And then sounds pretty awesome.
And then for our friends in Florida, that was
Publix.
Yeah.
I've heard of Publix.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I was just getting really frustrated. And my sister was still with my parents. So my brother was now in Texas. We find this church, right? And the church like opened up to me and my family, was really kind. It was a vineyard. That was the title of the church and stuff like that. And this had some like really cool experiences there. And we like became a part of their group, things like that. And then someone was like, hey, like, it was like those introductory, like, oh, we have a bunch of new members of the church. We're going to have like a membership class, like some churches do. Mm-hmm. And we're in there and this, and we're talking, chatting with these people. And they're like, hey, my mom's like, my son can't find a job. You know,
her voice exactly changes.
Catherine just here.
It sounded different earlier.
She grew as a person too.
Oh, that's good. Different experience. Life experience.
The guy's like, oh, well, I was working at this, like, I was one of the leaders at this camp called Spring Hill in Michigan. He's like, you should, like, if he wants to apply for like a summer role, he can. And so I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do it. And, but I was also already given the opportunity to be an intern at a church back in New Mexico as under the youth pastor there. And I was really excited about it. And so like months pass and it's like a month before I'm about to leave. And that youth pastor calls me up and says, hey, like, we decided to go with someone else. And I was like, what? Mm. Like, what are you talking about? And he's like, yeah, sorry. And I was like, the fart at the
end. Weird that he made that noise.
But I was like, oh, man. And I was just like, man, I was just really looking forward to actually having motion, you know?
Yeah.
That same day, I get a phone call from Spring Hill, this place I applied for months ago, being like, hey, Sam, sorry. Sorry that we missed your email. We would love to hire you. But instead of a high school counselor, would you want to be a high school special needs counselor? And I was like, oh, that's me pulling up my list, looking at it and being like, uh-oh, and looking at the bottom of the list and seeing that kids with special needs has not been crossed out yet. And I was like, I'll think about it. And then I told my parents about it and my mom, Sam, it's the Lord. We gotta do this. Again, switching it up. And so I was like, okay, like, I can't ignore this because this is my only avenue right now. So let's go do this, you know? And so I find myself in a littler town. I think it's smaller than LeGrand.
I think so, yeah.
Mm. It's a little town called Everett, Michigan. Mm. Outside of it is this huge camp, right? Like, Hannah, maybe you can describe it.
Yeah, so it's a camp for kids ranging from all ages, from like little kids, like kindergarten age all the way up through high school. So there are thousands of kids on that camp at one time. And there are also thousands of kids that they work with over the summer.
Right.
They also have day camps and a different location as well. So they're very big.
Yeah. and they had like zip lines mm-hmm. and blobs, if you know what a blob is.
Oh, yes.
And they had horses.
Horses, like
fancy
is it,
camp.
Yeah. Is it connected to a church or anything? Or is it just like,
no. It's just by itself.
Let's just be awesome.
Yes. Yeah.
That's their motto.
Yeah. And it was a Christian camp for rich kids.
Yeah.
So I found myself as a special needs counselor for high schoolers, and I went to a training, and it was like before camp started. And so I got special needs training, and we had like volunteers that would come, people who had special needs, and we would like practice. And so like I had never really worked with people with special needs before. I had a really great friend growing up in New Mexico. His name was Aaron, and he had Down syndrome, and me and Drew were really close to him and stuff like that. And he always went to our summer camps and stuff like that. And I was like, I've worked with people with special needs before. I can do this. So, you know, it's going to be easy. My first camper, his name was Ben, and he was taller than me. And I'm about 6'1", 6'2". Mm-hmm. He was about 6'5", 6'7". He's my first camper. And I was in charge of this person for a week. His parents just recently changed his medicine. And he's doing some new things. And she's like, he's prone to attack people. Mm. And so for a whole week, I was just stopping this individual from attacking other campers, stopping this individual from attacking himself, or trying to stop him from attacking me.
Wow.
Intense. And it was an intense week that felt like
forever.
Forever. And at the end of it, I was just kind of have this moment with the Lord of like, this sucks, Lord. I don't like this. Just being real honest with the Lord. And the Lord spoke to me in that moment of like this imagery of like, I was in heaven and this dude runs up to me. He's like, yo, Sam, I know you don't really recognize me, but I'm Ben from camp. Mm. And he's like, thanks for being patient with me. Mm. Thanks for loving me. And I had that moment and I was like, I'm sorry for doubting you, Lord. You know, and just having this realization of like, ministry's hard.
Yeah.
It's not glorious. And I knew that even in Thailand, you know, I knew that in my life, but like, it's just this different avenue of it. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, like I'm in, I'm doing this. This is on my list. And I want to make sure everyone is included always. And so rest of my camp was really fun. I met really great people who I'm still friends with today. The last week of camp, they're like, oh man, like Sam is really good at his job. And there's a lot of other counselors who are really good at their job. And I was a part of the high school house, if we're going to do this by Hogwarts standards. Okay.
Yeah, that's always how we should do it.
And there's four houses here, right? There's TST, Team Service Team.
Which house would that be?
That was the high school house. That was
No.
Oh, Gryffindor.
Okay, all right.
There was...
New Frontiers.
And
that was like the middle school... We want to be high schoolers, but we're not.
So that was Slytherin. Okay. And then there was Copper Country. Mm-hmm. Copper. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then there was Storybrooke. And those are like the little kids.
Copper Country.
Probably Hufflepuff. Hufflepuff. Yeah. And then Copper Country is probably Hufflepuff because those kids are crazy.
Yeah.
And then Ravenclaw, I guess. But there is like tension between the groups, right? Huh. We even we had like little like houses.
Like lounges,
and like we don't go to each other's lounges.
Yeah. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Wow. The high schoolers were upstairs where the New Frontiers were, and we're like, we don't look at them as they walk in. And like,
yeah. And did the stairs rotate around? You have to walk through a painting.
There's an escalator.
Okay.
They're moving stairs. Yeah, you're right.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they're like, Sam, we're going to make the best group of counselors ever known to Spring Hill, and I was like, okay. And they're like, and we want to honor what you originally want to do and just be a counselor, a high school counselor. And I was like, sweet. And they're like, some people want to switch and we want to like see how this goes. They kind of like prepare for the next summer and like other leadership positions, things like that. I was like, cool, let's do it. And so we all get together and it's like the A team, right? The best, counselors. And it's all high school, right? And so one of the high school girl counselors had to leave. I think her dad died or something. But there was a vacancy. And so we're all sitting in the mess hall and, you know, we're having our first team meeting and our area director's like, all right, guys, we're getting someone from New Frontiers. And I was like, all right, guys, listen up. We got to make sure that this girl feels welcomed and in that there's no opposition against her. The week before, just going to do a quick flashback. this whole experience being around Christian women for the first time, like really around a truckload of beautiful Christian women, it was distracting for me as a single male, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I was very like, part of my, when I wasn't helping one-on-ones, you know, I was like, who can I marry? You know, like I had that, like, yeah. you know, that notion yeah. in me.
That was like a freshman Bible college sort of thing.
Yeah, basically.
The week before, this one girl was like, Sam, I just want to be friends with you. I was like, there we go. And I was just like, in one of my really good friends, he was like, Sam, get over it.
It's a good friend.
Yeah. And then we played music and rage danced our frustrations out.
A great friend.
Yeah. And I was like, Lord Jesus, I want to be focused on you. Mm. I want to be focused on you alone for this ending of this season. So we're back at this thing, and I'm saying, we gotta welcome this lady with open arms. And this girl walks up to the table, never seen her before in my life. Goes, hi, my name's Hannah Kay. I was like, hi, my name's Sans Burrow. It's nice to meet you. And that was the first time I met my wife.
That is correct.
Wow.
Well, tune in next time, listener.
To see if we worked it out. We did.
I think they get married.
Don't spoil it. Oh,
dang it, sorry.
Dang it.
Yeah.
Well, we will put a pin in the story, and we will revisit it. And listener, tune in next week where we wrap up and we get to hear more from Hannah next week as their stories come together. Thank you for joining us again. Check out next week's episode. We got more to share.
Thank you for listening to the Faith Center Podcast Network. Be sure to like and subscribe for daily and weekly content. Once again, if you would like more information about Faith Center, you can visit lg4square.com, lg4square.com, and you can email the show at podcast@lg4square.com. Thanks for listening, and God bless.